Blog Talk Radio.
Busy week for all of us, I'm sure. Thank you for tuning in. The airways are being kind to us. You're going to always listen to a little bit of West End Blues by James Oliver. Test the Skype system. I'm sitting down with a nice cup of espresso here and thinking things Masonic, of course. And I have some acknowledgments that I'd like to present here at the start of the show as a way of thanking you for your ongoing support. To listeners from France and South Korea, Canada, thank you, of course, Philippines, Uganda, India, Brazil, thank you, very loyal group, China, always a pleasure. United States, Austria, Great Britain, the Cameroon, and Russia. These countries, the countries that listen here, give great credibility not only to Masonry, but also an acknowledgement that we're doing something right here at, we're meeting a need, I hope. And I hope that need is filled in some way. But the questions and the curiosities of Masons never seems to wane. So we'll get on with the program today. I think you're going to hope you're going to enjoy the commentary. A Masonic mind might exist. I know as frightening as that might seem to some of you. I'm presuming here that most of us are members of the order. But I hope, too, that if you're curious and wondering about the ethics and principles and what goes on, that you'll also be on that path of discovery for yourself. The secrets, the greatest secrets of Freemasonry are the secrets in a man's heart, in a person's heart. Masonry is more than governance, more than constitutions, more than structure. It's an idea. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of being. It's an influence that we want. We want these influences to affect our decisions and our well-being because we're striving to live a good life, a good life. It doesn't mean that we have to have a coin in our pocket or many of them. In fact, we look at the things that level us, not the things that separate us. Things that level us, we share and always have shared. It's not just geography or something geopolitical that we're talking about. We're here talking about something that is perhaps timeless. Mm-hmm. The things that you express and that you are, the questions that you have, I believe reflect the same questions, perhaps for different reasons, but the same questions that were on the minds of people that met, men that met earlier on, 15th century, we know they were documenting, and that suggests, I think it's you will allow that these kind of groups and these kind of gatherings were happening well before that without anybody taking minutes and writing it down or paying a fee. Most brilliant ideas that happen outside of those structures or in spite of those structures. But it's the structures are touch points, are touchstones, are points of reference for the entire world. We represent a time gone by, and it's so unusual. We don't represent something faith-based. We don't represent politics. We don't represent military conquest or mercantilism. We're not looking at colonialism. We're not talking about the history of trade or the history of science or the arts. We're a history of perhaps the watchful, the constant, the patient, the contemplative, trying, not forced, making an effort to understand. You know, you ask those questions, is this all there is? Or what is that? We have the basis of curiosity with us. And as we've gone on and developed, some smart people have written it down. They've simply written it down. Somebody would ask, why are you meeting? Well, why are you and I meeting? Well, we have something that we share in common, and we like the conversation, and we like to have a bite to eat, and we like we're grown up, so we like a libation. We like to have a drink. Or it may not be appropriate in the setting. It's not like we're taught to have some manners and some concern, and the manners are simply to be aware of ourselves and our guests. We don't want to impose. We're not going to sit down and expect you to feel uncomfortable in order to help me relax because I want to impose an order on you. No, we want to be able to relax together. And that means, you know, that's based on trusting. Where our anxieties, the things that fuel the boyish competitions, that over hypersensitivity, and the behaviors that we've developed to adapt and cope with them, that linger on, embarrassingly as they are, they linger on into adulthood. We transcend that. We're introduced to this opportunity, and not everybody gets it. The opportunity where the loutishness and the aggression is left over there. Over here, it's a more reasoned and thoughtful sense of the world. And people will mock us for that, and people will shake their head and not understand, and that's perfectly reasonable. But we're also aware that it's an influence when the young mind discovers this. It does influence. It has an appeal. It has the kind of appeal that new forms of communication have always had for humanity. Today, we walk a different kind of... We do. We're transcending politics in a new way. And it's kind of interesting, the male-dominated world that I was, the values that I was taught have been growing thinner and thinner because we've been examining them. And reasonable and bright people have been helping us to define ourselves as humans rather than by gender. Who knew? Who knew that we would realize a common gravity? We always had a sense that there was some genius that was being lost when we were shutting the door on people because of their gender. And we've stretched that, and it's uncomfortable. Anything that stretches us in an uncomfortable way is probably worth examining, isn't it? Like, where the hell did that come from? So it's not the time of my grandfather, certainly not. But neither did he live the time of his grandfather. We always live in the current moment, and we either don't get it, or we struggle to stay on top of it. And if it's not a struggle, we're taking it for granted. Masonry helps us to remember that life is and the processes around us are a struggle, and there's something in that to savor, to enjoy. So for you audacious types out there on this, what have we got here? I don't even know what we're looking at. We're only, 30 days away from solstice. We're at about 140 days into the year. I want you to sit back and listen to the music that I think galvanizes us all. You deserve it. So fill up your vessel, your cup, your glass with your favorite. And sit back and join me for a little while. We have some things to talk about, and hopefully we strike some common chords again. We'll get into some interesting work on symbolism, just because it's curious. The context of symbolism in Masonry. So we'll talk about that a little bit and share a little bit more of what and why. And I have for me, my age, discovered a poet, Arthur Rimbaud, the French poet. And I'm going to share a bit of his work, Frenchman. L'Eternité, the rediscovery of eternity. That's you. In the meantime, I'd like to have you, if you're not familiar with Cedar Walton, then sit back, you're in for a treat. This is his Cedar Walton Trio, Afternoon in Paris, and it is just sublime. Not bad. I told you. I thought you'd like that. It's, you know, it makes you think about the trivia and the drama, the unnecessary drama that we bring to our lives. For example, in this period of time, we have to be careful because we're aware that things are running out. I will put on your big boy pants if you can't handle this kind of conversation. Jeez. Things are running out. We need to be aware, as we always have, and perhaps failed to do it, be aware of the consequences of our actions. Whoa, geez, does that ever sound Masonic, eh? But we need to be aware of the consequences of our actions and our behavior. Our words matter. They matter in terms of what they do to us and what the effect that they have on other people around us. Put aside the mocking. If that's all it takes is somebody mocking you to hit that tripwire for your temper or your hurt feelings, you oversensitive little mess. Suck it up. Realize what's going on. We have to be aware. So if we're all piano players. Let's say we all play jazz piano for whatever reason. We like it. And we're pretty good at it. And we would probably be sitting together and meeting and talking and laughing. And you would be showing me your riffs and I would be showing you mine. And that fellow over there would be a composer, and the arrangements, we would have discussions around the arrangements. It would be something that we would have in common, and we would like it. We would enjoy the moment, and we might have, get together and have a little buzz. But one of the things that we would do is we would just talk about things that mattered and didn't matter. So right today, we might be talking about ivory. Mm-hmm. Your piano, you have a piano that has ivory insets and ivory keys, and you're talking, and I have one that has the newest compounds of plastics. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is not just aesthetic. It's also something environmentally sustainable. It's a large question, but we could have a debate, friendly debate. Can you tell the difference? And does it matter? And we could have great fun debating that back and forth. But here, I want you to think about the Masonic approach to it. The Masonic approach would be to sit down at that keyboard as Cedar Walton does. And it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter because what you're going to do is produce something absolutely sublime. You're going to produce music. You're going to produce a beat. music, tonality, texture, all of it. And at the end of the day, we would probably, I'm guessing, not be debating whether plastic keys are better than ivory keys. Hmm. We might all agree, you know, saving the elephants, yeah, that's pretty good. If you're looking for flaws and you're looking for, always looking for dissecting things to see what's not there, that's a bit driveling and a bit less than you're capable of doing. Because in the same instance, you could be moving forthrightly, picking up on what the intention of the idea is. Even the most ridiculous idea and the ridiculous behavior has an intention behind it. Masonically, we're taught not to judge. And when we judge fairly and with reason and with manners and sensitivity. It happens. I mean, there's situations where judgment is vital in life. But to walk around with a judgmental attitude, go and park yourself, you know, go on over there, you know, because you're a bit boring and you're a bit of a pain in the ass. But nobody's likely to tell you. Nobody's likely to tell you because they have to tolerate it. Ugh. And if we get a bit or sycophants and just go along with whatever the bully has to say, or whatever, is it the most aggressive? Is it the most boyish? Well, we'll all go along with it because we're all boys. It's a bit embarrassing. At a certain point, we outgrow that. We don't need it. It's like drinking until you throw up. Like, really? Really? We probably are capable of drinking the way the Greeks taught us to drink, always with moderation, just tippling a little bit. Or not. You ever had a lively, can you imagine being in the coffee houses of London and the debates and the outrageousness that we would be able to explore together? So what's the pace like today? You decide. If you've decided that in your mind you have enough information stuffed in there that you don't need any more. There's no more ideas coming in. I've reached an age, and I'm telling myself that at this certain age, I just shut down, and I can do it because just I can be legitimately stupid because of my age, and everybody has to tolerate me. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're tolerating it, and you're being intolerant of your own abilities and capacity to be an ongoing student of the craft and the world around us. Absolutely. So, here. Time for a little bit of a commentary here. And then we'll get into some music and some poetry. But a Masonic mind might exist. Of all the different types of minds out there, and we get to talk about that. What's the mindset? We talk about this in terms of the difference between our emotional reaction, you know, believing what we want to believe. So you're permanently on top of the world. You are the Godhead. You have all of the answers, and anything that doesn't agree with you is wrong. There you are. Does that define? Look in the mirror. This is not a question you need to answer to me. No, of course not. This is the secrets of your heart. You know, you look in the mirror, grow up, look in the mirror. And if that's the kind of person you are, is that the kind of person you want to be? And can you do anything about it? And you're doing it because you've always done it? So you've always limited yourself, is what you're suggesting to you. I've always thought that way. This isn't about masonry and trying to control. And it has nothing to do with comfort levels. This is about a limit. You know when you put a governor on a motor so it can't go fast? And what's the one thing all of us want to do? Take that governor off and see what this baby can do. Well, You've been wrapped really snugly. Your mother did it when you were an infant. Isn't it time to sort of unwrap the blanket, see what you're capable of doing? Oh, and you've decided arbitrarily that you're, what, too old? Or you don't have the right pedigree or the right education, or you've been lazy, or you've been preoccupied. Oh, okay. So as long you're intelligent enough to find a criteria to not do anything, to unravel your motivation. That's one of the capabilities of humanity. We're capable of tremendous efforts at stupidity. That's what it is. If a person's born without that capacity, they're not genius. They work very hard and have a good life. Bless them. They're complete. But when a person has capacity and they don't explore it for whatever reason, I find that for me fits the definition of stupid. It's a weakness, a flaw. But is there a law against it? Are you curious about your potential? Is what masonry whispers in your ear. Are you curious at all? Oh, we're going to use the bumper sticker. We're going to make a good man. Somehow we're going to make a good man better. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. If we start to parse out those words, we don't make you better. Masonry doesn't make you better, but it presents this whole array of ideas. And if you're curious enough, the lesson the mentors are teaching and the purpose takes us along in a direction of challenge and growth. No guarantees at all. So in that kind of context, I want to talk to you about a Masonic mind. And I'll get into this and then you can see what you think of it. Give me some feedback, masoniceffects@gmail.com. The benefits of living a Masonic life are too often left opaque, you have to admit. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it is thought that articulating would be like describing God or defining motivation to the Creator. You know, if you put words to it. Human minds are incapable of such efforts, after all. How could I possibly assume that I can explain God's purpose? How could I, you know, that's a bit arrogant, I think. But benefits do come to us, not as magical thinking, not as wish fulfillment, but results. Benefits of this living a Masonic lifestyle are about results. An article in Forbes magazine caught me by surprise when it printed an article by a licensed clinical social worker, Amy Morin, who seemed to have captured an understanding without the link to our craft. Does her itemized list resonate and apply to the mature Freemason? Here. She wrote about things we avoid. Okay, just check. Waste time feeling sorry for ourselves. Give away our power. Shy away from change. Waste energy on things we can't control. I've got a PhD in that one. Worry about pleasing others. Oh, wait. Must have 2 degrees. Fear taking calculated risks. What? I thought that's the point. You calculate the risks so you understand them. And the fear and anxiety subsides. Dwell upon the past. Oh, make the same mistakes over and over. Resent other people's success. Give up after failure. Fear alone time. Feel the world owes them anything. Expect immediate results. We are taught to root out ignorance, which includes our own. Aude, vide, tace. The motto gives us vital tools. That's our motto. And the motto comes to us, handed down to us, from the Grand Lodge. United Grand Lodge of England. Expect immediate results. As we begin to discern the world objectively, it comes with learnings in grace that it is better to remain silent when we do not know what to do. Know that ability varies, and some knowledge will not then be known to everyone. We learn to respect effort and diligence and optimism and honesty and sincerity and authenticity, knowing that there is always a price to be paid for truth. Always. It's like time after time. There's a little Chet Baker. Help you to savor that.
Time out.
Imagine him, Chet Baker, had his struggles through life, certainly did. He had to be convinced by other musicians that he should sing and he should record. He has a very soft voice. He's a trumpet player. And when they were in sessions, he would often be singing in the background, just, you know, riffing along with the music around him. And people found that he had an interesting voice. He had a good expression. So they urged him. And he had his demons to overcome. But I'm kind of grateful that that he recorded his voice as well as his instrument. Share with you a discovery, and I just find this remarkable here. This is a poet. Why poetry? Why the expression, you know, the emotional expression, the voice of the soul of the world? Why is that important to Masons? You have to ask. Why isn't this popular? It does separate us out, doesn't it? You find, you know, there's very little about us that sort of fits the populist mood. Where we go along, we walk out into the marketplace, we walk out into the agora, and we're right there. The crowd is carrying on about whatever is the fad of the moment, and we're right there. We're chomping at the bit. We're one of them. You find that after a while, it's not quite that simple. We're always sort of reflecting. We're watching what's going on in front of us, and we're reflecting on it and processing and coming up with our own understanding. Now, we're also taught some tools, and often we are very poor at applying them. We can't keep quiet. Every thought that we have in our head does not have to be spoken, does not have to be communicated, does not have to be validated, particularly if we have unpleasant thoughts. Or what in the world? Where did that come from in the first place? It's ridiculous even to ask. Because there's no place that it came from. It doesn't fit in the lexicon. We don't have to say everything. That's one of the aspects of silence that's important. Because as long as when everybody else is talking, if you're not, then you're listening. So there you are. You're at the door of Pythagoras College. And they've agreed to take you in as a student. And now you've heard for the first time, be quiet. You know nothing about our work, and you haven't been taught anything. Be quiet. You don't have anything to contribute. And nobody needs to hear, you know, the drivel. And certainly you don't. You've heard it over and over and over and over ad nauseum. So we have to teach ourselves silence. Oh my goodness, is this a frantic task? I find, if this is any use for you, that this is a challenge. It's a matter that is not a challenge as long as I'm aware, as long as I'm in that Masonic, what I call it, refer to as the Masonic mindset. It's so amazing what you learn. So absolutely riveting when you don't chirp in when the pace is that you're supposed to chirp in. Somebody tells an off-color or a derogatory joke, or now I find it offensive when people are making fun of women just because they're women. I find that tremendously offensive. And when I don't, you know, it usually self-corrects because they don't come back. I don't respond. It's like, this is ridiculous. It's just, you know, why are you making fun of it? The person that's saying that type of thing should be experiencing the self-consciousness and does around me, I guess. idle youth enslaved to everything by being too sensitive, I have wasted my life. This is Arthur Rimbaud. Jean-Nicolas Arthur Rimbaud. He's a French poet, and he is known now, in hindsight, for his influence on modern literature and arts. Do you care about such things? Do you care about the things that influence us? You do. He was born on October 20th, 1854, and he died on the 10th of November, 1891, in Marseille. And like you and I, we didn't just pop up and have this independent command of thought. You know the type, somebody that acts like their ideas are the most important, they've got the most research, and so there's a rightness to what they have to say. You know the type. Come on, admit it. No, this fellow was influenced by Victor Hugo and Charles Baudelaire and Walt Whitman and Le Comte de Lis and Tristan Corbier and Paul Verlaine. He was influenced. He threw other influence on him, and he influenced accordingly. And he was known for this. And this is all prefigured the surrealism. And he was a very, very good student, but he started to write at a very, very young age. And then he abandoned his formal education, and he ran away from home to Paris, right in the middle of the Franco-Prussian War. And he began to write. And he stopped writing at the age of 21. Can you imagine? I guess he felt he had said what he needed to say. Here, listen to this and see how it applies to your thinking and what it says to you, if anything. Eternity. It has been rediscovered. What? Eternity? It is the sea fled with the sun. Sentinel soul, we whisper confession of the empty night and the fiery day. From human prayers, from common spirits, you free yourself. And thus you fly, since from you alone, satin embers, duty breathes. No one says, at last, no hope here, no emergence. Knowledge with patience. Torment is certain. It has been discovered. What? Eternity? It is the sea fled with the sun. Oh. Oh. Thank you. Controversial as hell. What is it? That's John Coltrane on tenor sax at the start. And then Stan Getz stepped in. You could tell just that intonation. It's like satin. Beautiful piece of music. So it's a medley. Yeah? It's a medley. Maybe Autumn Leaves rather than Autumn in New York. And controversy here. Masonic effects. How'd you like that? I wonder, how'd you like that, South Korea? Yeah, was that okay? And to you folks in the Philippines? And I'm sometimes wonder, like, have you ever sat down with some Russian friends and in just the hospitality and the joie de vivre, it's just but to sit back and listen to some jazz with people from different cultures and different walks of life, it's just that, you know, so sublime moments after you eat and drink and relax and talk. And then you share these common experiences. And if you haven't, if you're not doing this enough, then do it. Get on with it. We're going to pick up some explanations and try and plug in some context for us all about symbolism in masonry. And this is sort of like, for me, it's like we're missing we often want to, we seem to be in a bit of a rush. So that's the business of Lodge. You know, we need to get through the actual work and the governance, and we need to be polishing our skills and beginning to understand the ritual, understand the roles that we perform, and then get into the delivery of our lines and then the coordination. You know. And then we get into a bit of education, you know. But usually we find that trying to get everybody on the same page is challenging. And how do you find that moment when everybody is just spellbound listening? Well, musicians do it all the time, you know. We're going to go to this lounge because Dizzy Gillespie. We're going to go to Club Coca-Cola because, you know, we know that really fine musicians will be there. And we're hoping and to be pleased, and always are, you know. Wherever we go, here, the music of masonry for a long, long time has evolved from, you know, the melodies and the compositions to symbols. The symbols have become, and oftentimes have become covered in dust. It's a part of masonry that's often not articulated. And it's like, do you notice these symbols around? Well, we might want to whisper in the ear, there's information around us for the curious minded, and leave it at that. Or do you have an enthusiast that says, you know, you need to, this is really good stuff. Do you want to join me? I'm going to go and, you know, we're going to sit down or talk. I've got a few fellows that are, you know, like-minded, and we're going to, you know, get into this. You want to join us, you're welcome to. So the curious, it's not for everybody. We don't want to hand people, you know, a volume of work when all they need is an appetizer. Just, you know, I'm not going to, and all too often, if we want to really, you know, complicate things, we start to use these moments as platform for recruiting. And then everybody's eyes glaze over, and you know that that goal is never going to happen. If the ceremonies are worked in an understanding manner, you know what that means. If they're worked, we can tell. If the performance is given by people who understand the manner, then it comes across, the meaning comes across much different than somebody that is speeding through it, you know, thoughtlessly. In fact, somebody to do that with Shakespeare, or we don't. We expect somebody that's going to express the roundness, the depth, and we know if we sit in an audience and listen, we're sitting in lodge, we can definitely tell when somebody is expressing the meaning to us in the words, when somebody has added the emotion. And all too often, sadly, it's rare, until that bar is set, that this is the standard for the work in this lodge. And that means moving forward. And that means just what it means. You always move forward. Well, I don't have baseball players on my team because they've been good boys, good old boys 40 years ago. I need somebody that's on their toes and ready to hit the long ball and hit the inside and high curve. You know, it's like, I need the talent at their peak all the time. It's okay. We agree with that when it comes to sport. And gracefully, everybody that's past that peak steps on, looking over their shoulder, encouraging the person that's going to replace them. Why? How have we let that notion escape us in lodge until now? Once you hear about it, think about it. So if the ceremonies are worked in an understanding manner with the master or other brother in the chair for the work, having by his own study found the true meaning to convey to the candidate, then some expiation may well take place. Ceremonies are not a test of merit for the master. Their importance lies in the meaning for the candidate, and not just in the words themselves. If the working is perfunctory, then no true masonry is worked. If somebody is getting through it to get through it, there's no real masonry happening. And I agree with this. we're limiting the education of our apprentices. We have not done what a master mason is trained to do and expected to do. In the same way, the members of the lodge, by their interest in the proceedings, must take a part in the effect of the ceremony. But a lodge is still not complete and fulfilled without some time given to discussion and contemplation on the meaning of masonry. This is really the motivation for Masonic effects. The realization that the time for discussion and contemplation is not feasible for different reasons, but it leaves the work incomplete. And here, you may not be able to have these conversations in lodge, but you can thrive or grow or have your ideas acknowledged or challenged in your own privacy. William Hutchinson, in the Spirit of Masonry, this is something that was published in 1775, and he tells of what a right-thinking Mason should see in the lodge when he attends. This is you. You're right-thinking Masons. The lodge, when revealed to an entering Mason, discovers to him a representation of the world in which, from the wonders of nature, we are led to contemplate her great original and worship him for his mighty works. And we are thereby also moved to exercise those moral and social virtues which become mankind as the servants of the great architect of the world, in whose image we were formed in the beginning. Just quickly, I'll go through that again. The lodge, when revealed to an entering Mason, discovers to him a representation of the world. It's introducing this representation about the wonders of nature, and we're led to contemplate her great original and worship him for his mighty works. In other words, we're introducing awe. That awe, is that, what other word can you use when you stand in awe of something? That's getting to the right thinking of Masonry, the spirit of Masonry. And then that moves us to exercise moral and social virtues which become mankind. It enhances us. Not vulgar or not ill-mannered and inconvenient. We're not here to create inconvenience for everybody around us. My goodness. But think, Confucius said this to us. You live a life where we present no inconvenience to anybody or anything. Interesting and wonderful mindset when you do that. It's so liberating. So you pick that up from what? 4th century BC in China? Or we then go to contemplate God's work and to worship. Such worship would be normal in a temple, and Hutchinson's words find an echo in a part of the lecture. The universe is the temple of the deity whom we serve. It is to be wondered that the places where lodges meet are generally known as Masonic temples when they represent to the Mason this vast area for the worship of the Creator. Symbolically, therefore, a Mason's lodge represents a temple, and this is represented by a symbolic shape, according to Oliver's interpretation, an oblong square. This was a reference to the old lectures, mainly current in the lodges under the former Ancients Grand Lodge. The candidates made progressive steps in the 3 degrees on the first, second, and third steps of a right-angled oblong square. The lecture went on to explain that this great, grand, and glorious oblong square had a proportion in length, which was three times its breadth, and represented the temple of King Solomon, which had these proportions. And indeed, you can find the reference in the King James Version, 1 Kings chapter 6, the second verse. It runs like this: "And the house which King Solomon built, the length therefore was 80 cubits, and the breadth therefore 20 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits. Now it's for us, they've left this work for us, to, you know, the work of the work of the adventurous people that were challenging the Vulgate, you know, the challenging the notion of the authority of the church. All of that aside, it's left for us to find the connections with many other faiths or many other religions around the world, and they are there. So we're looking at this through one lens of a multi-prismed kind of an existence, an understanding. True understanding of masonry transcends all of this. So the ground plan was 60 by 20, an oblong square, meaning that it had corners with the proportions of the sides at 3 to 1. It's natural that the religious outlook of our forebears should cause them to look to Holy Writ for some symbolic justification. They saw in the detail of its construction opportunities to symbolize the building of a spiritual life, to draw speculative conclusions from its many features. And Dr. Oliver stated this, and he quoted on it. So the next time we're together, we'll get into what Dr. Oliver was up to. I see that our time is drawn short, and you have to go, and I have to go, and we get on with our other duties. Always I want to represent in my mind that you are the true Mason, that you are the mind looking to complete the understanding, to discuss and to contemplate on the meaning of Masonry. To you, look into your heart, to the secrets of your heart, where the truth is known to you. And we'll move on here. I'll say goodbye now with a beautiful piece of music by Wayne Shorter. Just, what do you say? This is featuring Herbie Hancock, Reginald Workman, and Joe Chambers. Hey, India, how are you? I hope things go well for you this over the next week. And, of course, in France and in Great Britain and China. Standing up and taking a place globally. Our global community is growing and thriving, and it's more than just a concept now. It's a reality. And it's not without its imperfections. Progress is a lumpy affair. Enjoy your week. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Be generous with yourself. I look forward to having you join us again soon. Goodbye. Wayne Shorter. Yeah. Footprints. Very cool. Thank you. everyone. Have a good week.